What is your musical background?
What is my musical background?
Yes.
I went to the University of Social Security, which is the DOL in Australia. Self-taught, dear. Self-taught.
I see. And what first inspired you to write music?
What inspired me to write music? I started writing music when I was 7, and I don't really know. My first recollection of music, really writing music, oh, I don't know. See, when I was a child, I used to play piano accordion, not taught, but just invention.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I heard a piece of music when I was 6, I stayed home from school and I heard something on the radio and I knew immediately, I was only about 6 or 7 then, and I knew immediately, this, I'm going to do this. You know?
Yes.
And I remember the situation so vividly. I was playing with a transistor and there was a classical piece on the radio and it so struck me. I can't tell you the feeling, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I knew from that point. And then I started to do my own music. And, you know, even now, piano accordions, they do have a similarity to orchestras, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, was the music to El Niño de la Lune your first experience with film music?
Yes.
Okay. And can you just elaborate on that? Like, as the first time you've done it, was that the was that sort of turned your direction towards scoring for films?
No, most the opposite, really, because as you can see from the period of time that took place between that and the next project was quite a big one.
Yes,
so
it was.
It was very, very difficult, and we had no idea how difficult it was going to be. We sort of went in feeling quite confident that we'd be able to do this, but it's not an easy thing. You know, it's quite different to writing songs because you really have to be the servant to the image, you understand, but you can't be too much a servant to the image because if you are, then it's too near.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes really a bit of experience to do this work, you know. So I never went back towards it for quite some years after El Niño de la Luna. I at that time I said, I vowed I would never go back and do it again, but because it was extremely difficult, and you know, going in there with absolutely no experience, and you realize. We didn't really have a right to be there because we hadn't really spent a lot of time listening to soundtrack music and seeing how it actually works.
Mm-hmm.
So we were so ignorant at that stage. But, you know, having done that experience, it's amazing how it opens your ears and mind to listening to soundtracks suddenly. And then, you know, for the next somewhat, you know, 10 years, there was a lot of focus in that area, and then when we went towards doing the next project, it wasn't so daunting because you had some kind of an understanding of how to approach it.
Okay. So how did you first come to meet Michael Mann?
Michael Mann. I gave him some work. Well, he used some of my work in Heat.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd used a piece of Dead Can Dance music in Miami Vice, and which was even before that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've always found it interesting the way he works with music because he's quite brave. And, you know, even with some of the Miami Vice stuff, you know, it's really quite interesting the way he'll sort of come blazing in with electric guitars, but it's never corny. Do you know what I mean? It's really quite interesting. So I wasn't afraid to work with him. At the time, I gave him the pieces of music to use, and when I saw the film, I realized that there was a significance in the way that he'd used the work that was quite unique. And then when I recorded a record with Peter Burke, Duality, and he fell in love with one of the pieces, Sacrifice, and in turn wanted to use that in The Insider and gave us the opportunity to write some pieces for it as well, which we did, and in turn, we, you know, eventually became the original score writers for the film.
Mm-hmm. Now, I actually heard your music first in the soundtrack, The Insider. How did you first become involved with that project?
Well, I was It was really to do with a piece of music, Sacrifice.
Yes.
But having worked with Michael in Heat, he'd expressed an interest in going further and doing something more. I got the impression from working with Michael in Heat that he was looking for new composers to work in his film, that he doesn't like formula, and he doesn't like the score to sound like a movie score. It disturbs him. He's always, I find he's always rummaging around and looking for something that to put against picture that is, you know, in counterpoint with a new language, okay. You know, that he's trying to develop through his work. I mean, he isn't trying to develop it. He's developed it. He's quite, I see him as being, you know, one of the most important film directors in America.
I see. Now, The Insider has quite a different sound than any other soundtrack that I've ever heard. How much input did Michael Mann actually put into the soundtrack or the sound that you and Pieter created?
If Michael could be sitting at the keyboard writing the music himself, he would be. He's that kind of director. He's very involved. And thankfully for us to be involved in such a huge film, it was great that he had such a strong vision. Sometimes it was frustrating because we wrote pieces of music that we thought were really, really perfect for the things, but they weren't right for him. And, you know, it can be really difficult to try and accommodate such a strong, such a definite vision of what someone else wants to make. I think that's the most difficult thing about sound score music, is that you're having to work from your instincts, but you're also having to be obedient, you know, and he had a very large input. He was good from the point of view, though, that he let us write the music. He didn't tell us how to write, but we had to arrive at the essence of what accommodated his vision. I know it's a little bit tricky, it's a bit abstract, and it's hit or miss a lot of the time, but, you know, it's amazing how when you put something up against picture, it speaks volumes that it doesn't speak when picture isn't there. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yes.
So it's not as difficult to achieve this when you have picture in front of you. You can experiment and you can take lots of bits and pieces of anything. You grab anything and stick it up against there and see of old works that you've done, any kind of record, anything at all that gives you an insight. You know, just to give you an example, there was a cue in the movie Insider where Jeffrey Wigand is having a nervous breakdown. And, you know, the alpha immediate reaction for a nervous breakdown is to have something quite abstract and, you know, a sort of sweet but a little menacing, you know. And Michael had a completely different idea for that. He said, I want this music to be despondent. To give me the sense of despondency. So one thing I've learned from him is that we don't look at the character from the outside when we're doing film work with the music and paint around him his external environment. We have to look at the character from the inside, and it's quite a different reality. And if you have ever been depressed, then you realize that there is a certain despondency and an insipid reality. And he wanted to paint that despondent, insipid reality with a piece of music that really was quite detached from what was going on. And it helped. And I put with the voice, I used, you know, Leanne, his wife, has a kind of southern twang sort of accent. So I put in the voice a kind of southern twang in an abstract, you know, no language vocal. But it kind of had a kind of taunting quality of, you know, of his wife, the kind of taunting quality that we have when we're angry with our partner or whatever. It's just a subtle thing, but it helped a lot. It helped a lot to bring us to his reality of the, you know, the departure of his wife and his children and, you know, the pressure that he was under.
Oh, definitely. Now, I notice in a lot of your music, there seems to be this, there seems to be words being spoken. Now, you mentioned no language vocal. Is there any specific meaning to the words, or is it just that, no language vocal?
Well, you know, I mean, I've been asked this many times, and from, you know, I believe there's so much more meaning to these words because they're poetic and they strike, you know, a chord of truth within you that, you know, with language, language is such an academic exercise and it's based on memory, you know, where these works, it's not a denial of memory, of course, memory is in everything, but it's a, I believe it's, you know, it's an automatic communication directly from the heart. So, you know, the gate between the heart and the mouth is very near.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in when we respond with sounds, we can emulate our understanding of something with sound automatically. You know, so I see this as an artistic, it's a musical language, an automatic musical language.
Very interesting.
You know, that for me, I believe is more soulful for me. When I sing words, I have to work really hard to express every nuance, and there's a bit of acting, and there's it's very focused, everything must be very focused, and you must think and feel. So it's very much for me, it's a more material exercise to sing in English.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I can sing in the language of the heart, which I sing in, you know, it's not an intellectual exercise, it's an emotional exercise.